Facebook, Google, all of these companies are trying to figure out where are the rules and where are they going to draw the line.
There's clearly a demand for renters. They've got most of them full.
If you own a bond in your retirement portfolio, the price of that is going to go down.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, and 720 WGN.
And here we are at 12:11 from the Allstate Skyline Studio. Steve Bertrand on this stormy Thursday afternoon. Stay with us, Jen DeSalvo, watching the tornado warning in the newsroom, and we'll keep you updated on that. Obviously, thunderstorms for the rest of us as it's gotten pretty dark in downtown Chicago as we sit above the Chicago River.
Okay. And Steve, we have another thunderstorm warning coming in for DuPage, Will, Kendall, and LaSalle, and that is going to be in effect at least until 12:45. Again, that is DuPage, Will, Kendall, LaSalle, and that will remain in effect. That's a severe thunderstorm warning.
Okay, we'll keep Ryan that. Thanks very much, Jen. You know, we talked last week about Chris Hughes maybe who said it was time to break up Facebook, one of the co-founders. Ian Schurer is a senior editor for CNET.com, and he says, forget about breaking him up. He wants to put Mark Zuckerberg, well, I guess in the stockade. He joins us now. Are you there, Ian?
That's a little extreme, okay. But yeah.
was it Hughes? I've lost the name now.
It was Chris Hughes. He was actually Zuckerberg's dorm roommate back at Harvard.
And so now he's a billionaire.
Yeah. So, I think what was interesting to me, and, I've been following a lot of the criticism of Facebook, and I've shared, I've been part of it as well, right? I mean, the list of mistakes they've made and screw-ups and malfeasance is rather long now. And I'm not surprised that there's calls to break up the company. But what I tried to make an argument on CNET about is that Facebook is huge. Even if you took away Instagram, which has 1 billion people, and WhatsApp, which has 1.5 billion people, there's still Facebook itself has 2.38 billion people on its social network. So Zuckerberg, who has complete voting control and is an unelected leader and unilateral control of Facebook, would have the consolation prize of still running one of the largest companies in the world. And I don't think that would actually teach him a lesson. And so what I make the argument about is that the government needs to really step up here and actually start punishing these companies in a way that executives are fearful of being punished again, and instead try to protect us.
Hasn't Zuckerberg sort of said, punish me?
He said no. He walks up to that line and then he avoids it. He says that the tech industry needs regulation. But one of the very smart things about how he's doing this is that he's trying to shape the regulation and really try to build it in a way that wouldn't as badly affect Facebook, which is smart.
Sure.
The problem is that we need someone on the other end arguing for how Facebook also needs to feel a little pain in all of this.
Right, so I want to get back to that. And that's the argument you made, and I want you to explain that for me. Right, it's one thing to regulate, and maybe if the Congress ever gets it, or the FCC or whomever gets going, they'll do something like that. But in the short term, you're saying there has to be punitive fines that keeps them from doing this stuff again, because every time we learn about something terrible that Facebook has done, whether it's allowed our data to be sucked for data analytics or the election to be tampered with or anything like that, we sort of wag our finger at them and then we check our update page.
Exactly. And that's the other thing I made the point about is that, we keep telling Facebook it's okay every time we log into Facebook. And I'm not saying delete Facebook, that's your call. But, their user numbers have actually gone up 8% since the Cambridge Analytica scandal started last year. And, every time we share something on our newsfeed or like something or whatever, we're basically telling them that, we're angry at you, but it doesn't really matter. And that at one point, Facebook needs to hear this message. I don't know if it's going to be more punitive fines. I don't know if it's going to be threatening executives with going to jail or if it's going to be us leaving it. But something needs to change, and it needs to happen quickly.
Okay, so there's that. You're calling from San Francisco, from the San Francisco area anyway. And the city council there voted this week to ban facial recognition use by the police. I'm fascinated by this argument. It could be a very useful tool for police. Clearly, there are some civil libertarian issues or some civil liberty issues. Libertarians don't like it. And so the San Francisco Police Department's gone on the book saying you can't use it here.
Yeah, well, not the San Francisco Police Department, the
City Council,
Board of Supervisors.
Right.
So, what's interesting here is that this is actually the first law of its type in the country. There are others. In fact, Illinois has one of the most restrictive facial recognition laws on the books where you have to get permission from every person who would be facially recognized. When it comes to San Francisco, actually banning it from local government using it is really fascinating. You know, we're seeing increasingly more and more cities and states and countries around the world using this technology. The UK, very famously, has actually had a lot of trouble with using it. They have a lot of false positives. We know that historically, people who have darker skin colors tend to not be found as well through facial recognition. So that we have a lot of people who might be accused of something that they didn't do. And then, of course, China has a mass surveillance state that we've written about on CNET and it's been written about all over places. So this is a larger conversation. And I think what's really fascinating is that San Francisco, just like in 2004 when San Francisco started handing out marriage certificates to homosexual couples, I have a feeling this is going to kick off some of the conversation around the country about what do we want. How comfortable are we with the government basically taking away our anonymity when we walk down the street, and how we want
to
handle this?
Okay, but we can think of all kinds of ways for it to be misused, but are there not also ways for that it could be used well? I mean, say it's a Super Bowl crowd or an airport landing and things like that, where you want to scan large numbers of faces to look for people at one particular time. Is there not some positive use for it?
There is, and look, there are actually examples already where facial recognition is being used en masse in events, like you mentioned, you know, singers and whatnot. But, you know, one of the things that I think the San Francisco is bringing up, and if you listen to the debate that happened, which, you know, it's local government, so the debate went forever and it's a little boring sometimes. But, you know, one of the things they really talked about is that we really need to be thinking about the legal and civil liberties going on here. And we need to create guardrails, rules for the government about how it uses it and when. And by outlawing it right now, San Francisco is drawing a line in the sand and saying, we are not comfortable with the government using it for this, and this reason.
We've got a run-in, but the problem, right, is that you need to create the regulations before the technology exists, but you don't know the regulations you're going to need until the technology exists.
And that's why it's interesting San Francisco decided to kind of jump the gun here. Most people wait until there's a problem. San Francisco doesn't want to wait until people are up in arms about this. They want to stop it before it happens.
That's Ian Schur, senior editor at CNET. You can read more about that and his rant on Mark Zuckerberg at CNET.com. Not really a rant. It was a thoughtful argument. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Jen DeSalvo is in the newsroom, and she has her eyes on the weather. She'll keep us updated throughout the hour and indeed through the afternoon. Bill Geiger's in the studio. Our regular conversations with Bill are sponsored by Geiger Wealth Management, Chicago's retirement planning experts. Bill, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Good to be here, sir.
I hope you're going to bring a little sunshine to this stormy day. Yeah, it's kind of dark up here.
I was in Florida. I'm trying. I'm trying to bring some sunshine back.
So tell me a couple of things that are really important for couples to get right when it gets time to planning their retirement.
Steve, we spend an awful lot of time and energy and effort working on income planning. Income is what makes the world go round in retirement. We had a third appointment yesterday with a very nice couple. We have a three-appointment process. At the end of that third meeting, they walked away with a income plan for themselves,
right. How
they're going to pay their bills for the next 30 years. And it's one of the most important things you can get together for retirement.
We'll get back to that, but I haven't heard you say that before. So you have a three-appointment program with people? How does
that work? That's correct. The first appointment, we sit down, we really get to know who we're talking to, what's important to them. We collect financial statements. Between the first and the second meeting, we do a total analysis of their portfolio. And we use some pretty sophisticated software to do it. So the second meeting, we talk to them about what their portfolio looks like right now. And we spend some time talking about what it kind of sort of should look like at this stage of their life. The third meeting, we make specific recommendations, and we put together that retirement income plan.
Well, I bring it up because I like the idea that you're not sort of whiplashed with the plan when you sit down with someone. You take your time to go through the different stages of it. And so it's a more thoughtful approach for the clients.
Yes.
When it comes time for
them. It gives them a chance to learn along the way, to become educated. And even at the first meeting, they're walking away with kind of a helicopter view of what they should be doing. Folks come in and they're like, you know, I don't even know the right questions to ask. You know, what should I be doing? Am I doing everything I should be doing? And most of the time, as we've talked many times in the past, they're focusing a lot on how big their portfolio is.
Well, I was going to say, how many of them come in and say, well, we need to work on a plan for income?
Some. but after we really get into the meeting a little bit, you know, if you think about it, when you stop working, there's no more paychecks.
Right.
Right? I mean, that's in our heads, we know that.
I think about stopping working and stopping working, not being stopped being paid.
Yeah, well, that's what happens. The checks don't come anymore. And you get into retirement, about 2 weeks into retirement, you realize that. You really realize that. And a big part of the work we do is creating paychecks for folks after they retire so they can continue, you know, as part of their portfolio, continue and getting a paycheck every month.
Explain that for me. How is it that you do that, or how does it work?
We take a portion of the portfolio and we create dependable, sustainable income that they can count on. It hits their checking account the same day every month. Your bills come out monthly. Your income comes in monthly. So you and your wife will get your Social Security. You'll get a pension if you're lucky. And another source of income that we've helped you develop, and you put all this together. And if you can have that be a little bit more than what you actually need, that's nirvana, Steve.
You brought up Social Security. You take it as soon as you can receive it, or what's your strategy with Social Security?
Yeah? Depends upon
how does it depend?
It depends upon how early you want to retire, and depends upon how much you have in your portfolio. If your portfolio isn't as big as what you would like, it's better to you're retiring early. It's better to take the Social Security, so you're not bleeding down your portfolio.
I see. Right. Okay.
It makes it last longer. And that's one of the things that we work on, too, is just how long your money's going to last, how much income you need to retire. As a matter of fact, folks, if you're out there and you're listening to this and it sounds like something that you'd like to explore, the next five callers who call in, we're going to sit down on a complimentary basis and put together a full-blown plan for your retirement. Complimentary.
Bill Geiger, nice to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Good to be here, sir.
Dodge the raindrops on the way home, will you?
We'll do that.
Thanks very much, Jen DeSalvo. Steve Bertrand here in the Allstate Skyline Studio, high above the Chicago River on this stormy afternoon. You know, the old post office, have you driven under it lately? There's a lot more activity in it in recent days. And in fact, there's a story in Cranes about how maybe Uber will be moving into the old Chicago post office. We'll talk to Amy Guth about that a little bit later in the program. But right now, Philip Weiss is here. He's the president of Work Right Solutions. And Work Right Solutions, it's his job sort of to advise businesses to keep them out of legal trouble, right? How'd I do on that, Philip?
Perfect. Better than me.
I don't know about that. Okay, so I'm happy you're here because, you know, that when the Chinese, I think the vice premier came into town or into D.C. last week, they talked about how culturally they sort of wanted a handshake agreement on this trade deal. They didn't want everything written down. And I don't know if it was culture, if they were trying to get around some things or what. But and it sort of raised the question, is that ever a good idea or is it always a bad idea?
Well, it's really it's top of mind for a lot of people, both on the political landscape and arena and on the business side, because President Trump and his negotiators, they also seem to favor this sort of look him in the eye, build a rapport, come to a mano a mano or person to person agreement, and then shake on it, as opposed to saying we got to get some draft documents, we got to get some actual paper in front of the adversarial or negotiating partner.
Right, and so I thought of it from the standpoint of the Chinese, but you're absolutely right. President Trump, you know, has this view that if he can be in a room with someone, he can, you know, they can hammer things out.
And that's something that we've heard over the decades from so many clients. I want to be able to be there, feel the person, get some mojo, get the chemistry.
Right.
And then I'll wait for the paperwork, even if that's years later. And the administration has seen the results of that with the Chinese potentially backing out of some verbal commitments they made. Business people see the same thing.
Let me give you my own experience. I mean, I've engaged in agreements or deals, and I feel like if you start bringing up contracts, that you start saying, I don't really trust you.
Yeah.
And so I prefer the informal approach, and maybe that's not a good idea, but it improves the relationship.
Yeah, and your instinct is actually a positive one. because it goes to this notion of relationship building, of fostering trust, of not questioning someone's ability to come through and requiring them to put it down on paper. And a lot of transactions, candidly, there's no contract. You get a haircut, you're not signing a contract. You know, if you shave my whole head, there'll be a $10,000 right. penalty. But at some point...
Well, there are guys like me who get ripped off all the time.
Well, then maybe you should think about it. Glad I showed up today. The flip side of that, though, is over time, whether you have a 5 or 10 year relationship based on handshakes, maybe it's the 11th year or the 12th year where something will inevitably go wrong. And starting early with a positive way to frame and engage in some kind of written agreement can save you at that point later.
I'm in the process of selling a condo. I think with any luck at all, we've set a closing date today. But that is, you know, you work with a realtor. I have a lawyer, John Poen, who's, you know, got everything down on paper and all of that. That's the sort of thing you want to have a contract for.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm glad you're doing that, even though your inclination may be to go for the handshake, apparently. That's one area where, from time immemorial, courts have said, if you don't have it in writing, we're probably not going to support your commitments on either side.
I imagine there are a lot of cases where a friend thinks he's selling a house to a friend.
Hey, guys, I need to pause you for another second. We have another issued warning out there. The National Weather Service has issued a severe thunderstorm warning for northeastern Livingston County in central Illinois, east central LaSalle County in north central Illinois, and Grundy County. This is at 12:40 that they issued this. It's going to last through 1:45 p.m. Ping pong ball size hail and 60-mile-per-hour wind gusts are included in this alert.
All right, Jen, thanks very much. We'll keep you posted on that. Appreciate that. Let us know if there's anything more. You sell a house to a friend?
Yeah, you'd think if it's a friend and it's a friend's handshake, there's not much more that you can trust than a friend and their commitment. But we've seen this again and again where people made the mistake of assuming a friend would come through on a deal. We were in real estate, focused on real estate a few years ago, and a couple of guys, best friends, handshake deal for one to sell the other his house.
Right, right.
He was sure the deal was done, and he took all the steps you would expect. He put a down payment on another condo. He bought into a timeshare. He took his house off the market. He even had a going away party for himself, to which he invited the entire neighborhood.
He spent the money that he would have spent on a realtor, right?
Yeah. Big mistake. And to that party, he actually invited the gentleman, his friend, to whom he had thought he had sold his house. On the way into the party, on the way into the neighborhood, the best friend, the buyer, sees another house has been put on the market. A better house. Nice jacuzzi, apparently some fully wired entertainment room he could see through the window. He meets the man who's selling that house at the party.
That the other guy set up.
They're right. And he basically says, I'd love your house. They sign a contract within days, and the first guy had no rights because he never had it down in writing.
Okay, so you need a contract. I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. So how do you frame it so that everyone's happy?
Yeah, so this is really what a lot of people miss. It's all about the framing. You want to be positive. You want to put it on yourself. Say, look, blame yourself. Say, I want to make sure that I come through. I want to make sure that I do everything you expect from me. And you know what? I don't want either of us worrying later that we missed something because I hope this is the beginning of many deals to come.
Right.
So there's a lot of ways to frame a particularly business contract.
Can I find a contract online and just fill in the blanks?
Yeah, well, as you might expect.
As a lawyer,
I would say good to find a lawyer. But you make a great point, Steve, because a lot of people will go online. That's just the way of the world.
Sure.
If you take that route, number one, you want to adapt the form to make it really relevant. Add as many specifics as possible. Like what happens if you don't get a complete shipment or it comes late? That can have different facets. And then once you've made those changes, still show it to a lawyer. That's a limited business investment at that point. There's a lot of great flat fee reviews of these kind of contracts.
Philip Weiss is the president of WorkRight Solutions. Thanks for coming by, Philip.
Thanks for having me.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. So you think dating these days is tough with all the apps and online profiles? Well, how about this? Every time you choose to match with someone, you send them a virtual gift that you pay for. But the recipient doesn't actually get that gift. You just pay for it. Well, there's more to it than just that. A charity eventually gets the gift. You might be saying, you're telling me I have to pay for a gift to someone who I literally have not even met yet. Ha, okay. Cindy, spelled C-I-N-D, is the app behind this, and their goal is to get rid of the idea of mindlessly swiping left or right to get as many matches as possible. Instead, something more mindful. Some of these virtual gifts range from $3 to $100. Sometimes you gotta be bold and try something else. And something else that's bold is the decision to categorize Uber drivers as freelancers instead of full
employees for Uber. That means that drivers will have a very hard time forming an official union, file complaints against the company, and a number of other restrictions. There are more than 65,000 rideshare drivers in Chicago alone. I'd bet this will not be the end of the conversation. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Amy Guth is in the studio. Amy, so let's, after the show, go for a walk to the new old post office.
Well, it's going to be a quite a destination soon enough.
I've been driving under that post office my entire life, and it's been empty for a majority of my life, I think. Right? Since it's, well, probably 30 years.
And we keep kind of hearing these lofty plans, and this is going to happen, and then no, it goes quiet, and this is going to happen, then no. But all of a sudden, it's upon us. And the big news today is that Uber is in talks to lease about 450,000 square feet. So that would make it the biggest tenant, because they got square feet
say,
to
right,
spare.
Which is like a drop in the bucket, really, to the space they have, but it still would be the biggest tenant there.
Yeah, they have 2.8 million square feet of office space in there, which is like unfathomable right. amounts of office space. So about 500,000 of that would go to Uber if that goes through, and it would make them the biggest tenant. So, you know, we see Walgreens Boots Alliance has they've got a deal there, and Ferrara Candy, Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning, and the ad agency Abelson Taylor all headed that way. So
it's happening. It's going to happen. I have not been over there. I don't know that you've been over there, but as I understand, the businesses are going to start moving in. They're not moving in right away, right? Is it coming up September?
Yeah, it won't really get all of it won't be open until like second half of this year, and then more parts of that along the river in 2020, where the rooftop deck and the plaza facing the river and all the fanciness going on over there. So it's going to be quite a sight to behold.
You know, it sounds like it could become a real Chicago destination if it works out.
It can. And I think it's interesting, you know, that Uber is taking that big a stake in it, because they've got Uber, the freight part of it over on Randolph, and then offices on Canal. This would dramatically increase their office space. And here at the same time, when we have Facebook and Google both expanding their footprint in Chicago, that's a really, you know, it's an interesting moment to be in, saying, look at all this tech investment happening here.
So that's a big, big building, still a lot of space. Is it have the people, I don't recognize one, but have the people of the companies that are moving in there, is there any sort of theme to what they're doing? I mean, it's not necessarily becoming a tech hub or anything like that.
No, it doesn't seem that way. I mean, we have such a kind of swath of things. It just seems like it's going to be this ginormous office space, and a lot of, you know, mixed use too. There's going to be some retail and some attractions and dining and that kind of stuff.
So it's the sort of thing that someone could go just to go. There might be restaurants in there. You'd go there to go out for dinner?
I mean, in theory, right?
Not just a food court?
Yeah, something beyond the food court. Who knows? No offense to that food court in the Thompson Center. It's a fine place. However, yeah, no, I'm not sure exactly what that restaurant space will look like. I know there's, if you're going to have that many workers and try to attract that much talent to Chicago, you got to back it up with stuff to do.
That's nice. And not too far away is the Willis Tower. And I know they're doing $500 million overhaul there. So a real shot in the arm to the Southwest Loop.
We're getting a lot of makeovers around here. That's what's happening. It's makeover
time.
Well,
it's our age, Amy. It gets to be time.
That's right.
And I'm assuming you're talking, is it Danny Ecker wrote the story?
Yeah, Danny Ecker wrote the
story. So are you talking to Danny in the Daily Gist today?
No, today I talked to Dennis Rodkin kind of about the top real estate stories in the commercial, or sorry, the residential real estate sector. Really interesting. There's a couple of really interesting historical homes that are for sale in the Noble Square neighborhood that just had some strange details to them. And of course, there's a study out that is looking at eviction data and how it is not evenly distributed across Chicago. So I talked to him about that.
Find the numbers at the Daily Gist coming up a little later this afternoon. Subscribe to it. Thanks very much for coming by, Amy.
Thanks so much, Steve.